Travers Cosgrove, Reel 5. So you'd you came to the Fillets.
Yes.
Do you know what date you arrived there?
No, I don't. The tide of war had very recently swept across it. Our task was to open up the roads so that we could use it for advance to the Seine.
What did you see when you got there?
Dead men and dead horses. I drove over both lots of dead bodies in trying to get across it to a point where we could get bulldozers in to clear the roads.
What effect did the sight have on your men when you got there?
Very few of them actually got there because it was really a bulldozer job. But they will have seen the equivalent sites in the surrounding countryside. Well, it was victory, of course. I suppose that was the cost of it in human life to the enemy was horrendous.
So in clearing the gap, the bulldozers were the first thing?
Yes, to get them there. Really, we didn't do any more than push dead bodies and wrecked vehicles off the road so that we could use. Burying them was in another stage, which I wasn't involved in. The CRE, the colonel, asked me to meet him at a rendezvous map reference in Fillets. I had an awful job to get there. In fact, my half-track couldn't get in past dead tanks on the road, and I stole a civilian car to get there. From that point of view, it wasn't a particularly difficult job to get those roads open and able to get the division moving eastwards. But it was a shock to see what... we had seen plenty of dead bodies at other stages in Hill 121 or whatever it was. Scotsmen and Welshmen and Englishmen, all the various ways of attack, but here it was. Of course, we didn't realise how much the Germans were dependent on horse transport. It was brought very violently to our attention.
All the people I've spoken to before have particularly mentioned the horses. Yes.
The Fillets brought it home to us. Of course, we did know. I mean, obviously, we had come across it, but never to that extent.
Because the typhoons had.
The typhoons had. They were new on the scene, or relatively new on the scene. We had come across them a few days before. I remember writing a little article about our advance southwards, and we weren't really sure whether our yellow strips were adequate to identify us to the typhoons, but we just had to go on, and we didn't suffer.
wrote that article at the time, did you?
Yes.
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 Inform your...
No, not at the time. No, no, I didn't. I wrote it much later, in the last 10 years or so.
Right.
Only one of our people, I think, actually wrote or made a record, and he's a fellow in Coventry, Terry Gregory, that I wanted you to try and contact, but he actually did make sketches, right, but he wasn't there. He didn't join us until much later.
Right, okay. So after the Falaise Gap?
Well, then the division moved eastwards. And we were part of, I told you we were always brigaded with the Oxford and Bucks. We were the Stu platoon, and they were the second battalion in order of seniority. There was a great changeover not soon after we were landed, and the battalion 158 Brigade, 158 Brigade consisted of three battalions of Royal Welsh Fusiliers. Monty said to us, "That's got to go. You have, whatever the cost, you have got to get those regiments, battalions separated." So one had to go to each of the other brigades, 7-1 Brigade and 160, to spread the risk of local loss. And we lost the 1st East Lancs and got in the 4th Royal Welsh Fusiliers in their place after we were in Normandy. But they remained, although they were the junior, they remained number one battalion, and the rest of us, I stayed with the Oxford and Bucks. And in the period before we got to Falaise, I had been out on patrol with a lieutenant from the Oxford and Bucks. We had been planning to lay mines to prevent a German advance on a rather badly defended sector. And two things emerged from that. First of all, that I had been living in High Wycombe, as I think I told you, and I said, "Did anybody come from Wycombe?" When I met this section for this patrol, and yes. So that rather established me with the, you know, the troops and the Oxford and Bucks. And secondly, the officer who led the patrol, Arthur Morley, became the adjutant. And thereafter, it was very easy for me to deal with the Oxford and Bucks because he and I had been in a little scrap together, and that helped me for the rest of the war.
So as engineers, you used to work alongside the Oxford and Bucks, facilitating what they...
Whatever their problems, I was the first person the OC would send me, but I would be the one he would always try and send. Mm-hmm. And so...
You would
yes.
then go and look at the problem, would you?
Yes. And if they were in the lead, I would follow them. It wasn't always the case, but by and large. But it did make for an easy relationship, mm-hmm. particularly after Arthur Morley became the adjutant. And, you could find the officer you had been dealing with last week was no longer there, but the adjutant was always there.
Yes.
So it made battlefield life easier.
So you were still working. You were working your way eastwards.
We're now going eastwards. We were going in a convoy. We now got 3-ton vehicles, troop carrying vehicles. We hadn't had them before. We had marched if they were going anywhere. Because we were most close always, but when we joined the Oxford and Bucks convoy, and I suppose they were probably leading the brigade anyway, they were motorised, and we had been with our engineer vehicles. And I'm sure that was the first time I had seen our infantry being lorried. And I remember we came through a wood and into a little valley, and there was an old farmer ploughing way up the side of the valley by another wood, and he suddenly turned around and saw a convoy at the bottom. He ran down the hill, so of course he couldn't stop us, but he was overjoyed. It was one of the very first French civilians that we saw. We'd come quite a long way. Of course, if you'd been in Cornwall and any places, you would have seen others. But he was one of the first we actually saw.
I'm pleased to see you.
yes. Well, I really forget much about the detail of the journey to the banks of the Seine. I can only remember that there can't have been too many problems. And we got to the bank of the Seine, there was a big one. And there was another engineer unit, probably a core troops were probably there. And this, you asked me about the instructors at training battalion, and this is where I saw another one of them, as a platoon sergeant or something of the sort. So that, if there was any problem about them doing something else, that solved it. So he was delighted to see me, and I was delighted to see him on the banks of the Seine.
Whereabouts did you come up to the Seine?
Muids, I think, is the name of the crossing. It wasn't a very important place. I think Mouvage actually was on the east bank, and we had to cross the Seine. There was an island in the middle, and so there were two branches of the Seine. I forget exactly what I think. We were involved with the first crossing, folding boat, FBE, folding boat bridge. Bruno Elgood, who did so much, would you have come across that name, Elgood? No, he's dead now, so you won't.
He had been another
platoon commander when I was there, but he had moved from 3rd platoon and was one of the reconnaissance officers, the senior reconnaissance officers at company headquarters. And he was one of the keen young athletic types I talked to you about earlier. But he really did understand Bailey bridging. But this time it was folding boat equipment, which was of a much earlier vintage, but did its job for an infantry division. No good for an armoured division, but it did its job for an infantry division when the river was possible. And we had problems with the deep and steep banks, that sort of thing, but he solved those.
How did he solve those?
He knew his job. The equipment was meant to do the job, but those who weren't familiar with it didn't understand it, as I recollect. Anyway, I think it was next morning. I don't think we had anything to do there. We were there to. We may have assisted him. We may have laboured for him in building this bridge on the near side, but sometime the next morning we were across and on the next bit of bridge which we hadn't built, and they were worried because our half-track vehicles were 10 tons, not 9. But we were classed as class 9 because the axle load was well spread. But on a folding boat bridge where the total weight and the and the freeboard mattered, we were a bit of a problem. However, and then of course we'd also put a layer of sandbags in the floor, you know, against mines blowing us up. So we were heavy load. Anyway, we got across and we just kept going. We were now getting to those parts of France that we had heard of from our parents. And we just kept on and on. At Amiens, we saw the prison that they bombed to let out the free French people. The mosquitoes had gone in and bombed that. We passed Amiens on the west side. And the real first obstacle we met was at a town whose name will come in a moment, Estaires. And I was supporting the chief column, which was the 4 IWF. And we got there, and the big, great, big, important bridge was felled in the river, and the RAF were just wading across. And then a fellow Frenchman came out of the house in his bathing costume, and he said, "No, no, no," he says, "you get in my back," or whatever it is. He piggybacked across. It was about 4 feet of water, you see, at the bottom there. He made sure they got across with dry feet out of there. Actually, but I haven't finished about him. So as he got the RWF across, well, this was a built-up area. There's nothing we could do with a bridge because the top of the bridge was obstructing the space where we would have put a Bailey bridge. So, you know, it was a big bridge. So we'll have to find another bridge site. And I had Sergeant Bourne with me and my batman, and we went off along the these rivers were canalized, so there would be a footpath, towpath. And after about a couple of hours, there was a space where there was a gap between the houses on the other side. On our side, there was no building close to the bank, and you could make if you went along this towpath, you could do turning your traffic through 90 degrees required a lot of space, because your bridge would come right up to the bank. So, we went on to see if there was anything better at the next bridge. And we saw a young man going like this to us out of a doorway, garden doorway. So we got down off this path and went along a lower one. And we caught him. We got to where this lad was. He said, "Oh, there was a German across the way." They were still fighting, but we must have put them off. They'd gone. And then we got back on the path, and there we were at the next bridge, where there had been a bridge completely demolished, and a longer span. And then the next battalion coming up the road beside were my Oxford and Bucks. But they were disconcerted when I got out on the bridge site, 100 yards ahead of them, and they hadn't got there yet. But there was nothing I could do for them. It wasn't an important and easy bridge site. I told the colonel, who was well to the fore, and he says, "We want to get across." I said, "Yes, I know you do, sir, but I'm not going to be here." And so I went back, and we got ordered up materials for the site I told you about, and built there and then. And then it was done in the morning. Early morning.
So you worked through the night?
Worked through the night on that, yes.
How many platoons were working on it?
Probably three. Mm-hmm. Probably three, I don't know. Certainly probably two and three. Then there was sort of a civic committee came along, you know, to congratulate us, you see. And it was Michel Nager again. This fellow had put on his swimsuit, so I called him Michel Nager, which delighted him tremendously. And he brought on a couple of pretty girls to present a wreath, and they said, I hadn't been the bridge commander, but he pointed me out as the man who had been around first, and I had a ceremonial kiss and a wreath, so flowers, which I put on the bridge. So Michel Le Nager at Estaires was someone I remember rather fondly over the years. I don't know who he was, and I never saw nor heard of him again, but I would be Michel Le Génie, I suppose, to him.
So you got over the
Seine. That wasn't the Seine. No, this was actually almost very near the Belgian border.
Right, sorry.
We're a long, long way, moved a long way.
Oh, yes, you have.
We moved a long way.
Western
China. We didn't go to the, you know, to the coast at all. We were going, the next place we came to was Mons. We stayed the night in camped in Mons, and then we went on to Antwerp. And we went up on the west side of the Scheldt and crossed over in Antwerp. We got across the river in Antwerp, which must have been intact.
What state was Antwerp itself in?
Very little damage. I can't give you any official comment. It was very little damage. Our advance had been too quick. The Germans had concentrated on getting their troops back if they could, and our advance was to keep them to the coast. There weren't many in the hinterland. We really separated those from the coast from their normal lines of communication. We got across it we went to a place called Rommelgem on the northeastern edge of the town. It was probably an old fortress area because they were outside the main fortifications, but it probably was an old fortress area there. And we just plonked ourselves down. We were on the edge of a market garden sort of area, and plonked ourselves down there very exhausted, and civilians were very delighted to see us arrive, but we had no more petrol. And you know the problems of the petrol and pattern and these things. So we tidied up the front line to a canal running east-west. And Antwerp docks. And somebody else was finding out the little bit of the rest of Belgium and the little bit of Holland south of the Scheldt. But we were quite peaceful there for a couple of weeks, I suppose.
What time of year was this?
This was September, wasn't it? Early September.
So you had something of a rest then?
Yes, we did.
We'd come a long way.
And the citizens of Antwerp wanted us to come in and party. Well, we did in a small way. We were probably there a couple of weeks while Monty was planning the Operation Market Garden to capture the bridge at Arnhem.
What did you know of that before it happened? Did you know something was going to happen? Or?
Yeah, we knew that was our objective. Well, I don't know about Arnhem, but we knew that was our objective. And it was a long way away. A lot of water crossings between us and that objective. We now established sort of a canal line limiting our advance. We did find a place at Lommel, L-O-M-M-E-L, where we could build a low-level floating bridge over the canal and rebuild a high-level road bridge for tanks. And part of the division did the low-level crossing. It got enough people over to drive the enemy back far enough for us to be able to do the high-level crossing. Which was a triple-double Bailey bridge in three spans. Two spans, or was it? Probably two spans. One pier being built on an existing remains of an old pier of the previous bridge and getting across that way. So that was. It took about 48 hours to build that. And Monty was I won't say he was a frequent visitor, but he was around to see that we were getting on with it.
So you saw him
there? Yes, saw him there, yes.
Did he come and sort of inspect the troops or survey the scene?
He just came to survey the scene, yes. He made himself known and that sort of thing, but he didn't want to stop us getting over the bridge.
Did you speak to him at all? Did he actually come up to you?
I think I did say good morning, sir, or something of that sort. Yes. Well, that was fortunately done in good weather. Mm. And this became the corridor that led all the way up to Arnhem. And then when we'd done this, we went off on the tail of the troops that we had allowed us, and we were responsible for roads for the road we were travelling on and branch roads to east and west, and eventually we came to the crossing of the Meuse, which had been captured intact, I think, and the crossing of the Lower Rhine in Nijmegen.